So before Bhagavatam class, we read from the pastimes of Srila Prabhupada, his activities during his manifest activities in this world. Prabhupada is in New York, 1966, it appears. Prabhupada said, "Everyone in this material world is lost, destitute. Even the so-called successful person, because everyone has forgotten Krishna." After the evening program, Swamiji sat in a chair by the exit as a few members of the audience were leaving. This is the end of a lecture that Prabhupada gave in Judson Hall. The devotees rented a big hall and invited everyone to come and hear a discussion on Bhakti Yoga, Bhagavad Gita. And with a seating capacity, the hall was about 500 people, and 7 people came. Well, sometimes we may think we have a program and very few people come, maybe Radhastami or Janmastami or maybe Ram Navami. We wanted more people. We always want more. We're never satisfied. Devotees always want more and more and more. More prasadam, aniyor, aniyor. More kirtan, aniyor, aniyor. When the kirtan stops, everybody says, "Oh, why'd you stop?" And when the mahaprasadam stops, "Oh, why'd the mahaprasadam stop being distributed?" And when the Bhagavatam class ends, if it's a good class, "Oh, why did it have to stop?" Aniyor, aniyor. More and more. So, 10,000 people came for Ram Navami. Only 10? Should be 10 lakhs. Should be 10 crores. Everyone should come. The report should be given. Who didn't come? Who didn't come to Ram Navami? Oh, there was one man somewhere in Chandi Chowk. He didn't come. Otherwise, everyone in Delhi came. So like this, Prabhupada, but nevertheless, Prabhupada, he went there, and with full vigor and enthusiasm, he preached to 7 people in a hall that could have 500. So Prabhupada sat by the door of the hall, and people that were going out could greet him and speak to him. One respectable-looking American couple introduced themselves. Swamiji sat up very straight in his chair, and with folded hands, he smiled. "Namaste. Hare Krishna." Prabhupada sat like this with his and he smiled, being very... So you see by Prabhupada's behavior, Prabhupada is, Mahabhagavat, Param Vaishnava. But Prabhupada is showing them, first of all, he's showing them Amanina Manidena Kirtaniya Sadahari. If we don't see any examples of Manina Manidena, how will we know how to develop the proper humility to chant the holy name? So Prabhupada himself is showing, he's not thinking, he's not thinking, "Do you know who I am? Do you realize who I am? I'm the temple commander, ISKCON Delhi. I'm the founder acharya of ISKCON. It boasts a small storefront, one storefront in Lower East Side." He had no pride, no money. He's thinking, "You've come to my program? You are approaching Krishna?" So Prabhupada is showing by his perfect... This is acharya. They act in such a way to set the perfect example of humility, of preaching, of surrender, of attachment to Krishna, of love for Krishna, attachment for hearing, attachment for chanting, attachment for reading. Like we say, I don't like to read Prabhupada's books very much. But Prabhupada showed us how to be attached to reading his books by reading them himself. Prabhupada would read his own books. One time he was reading Krishna book in Mayapur. He had a big smile on his face. And one of the devotees from Mayapur walked in and he saw Prabhupada reading the Krishna book. He said, "Prabhupada, you're reading Krishna book." He said, "Well, of course. Why not?" He said, "Well, you wrote the book. I thought you wrote the book for us. I didn't know you read your own books." He said, "Of course I read them. Besides, I didn't write these books. Krishna wrote these books." So Prabhupada is folding his hands and in great humility, respect and appreciation of these people that approached Krishna, that came to hear his lecture. They were 7 people. And then he smiled to show the love of his heart. A smile conveys the love of a person's heart. So he smiled at them to Like we hear Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he traveled through South India, there were two astras that he used for distributing Krishna consciousness. One was his Saundarya Rup. Saundarya Rup means his beautiful form. This was his preaching tool. Beautiful form. And the other was his Prem Nam, the pure chanting of the holy name. So these were his weapons. So beauty not only means beautiful body, just like if everyone's in a kirtan party, all the men are dancing in kirtan, and some demigoddess walks in the temple, I wonder how many people will change their attention from the demigoddess away from the, they'll be distracted to look at the demigoddess, the brahmacharis. Because something extraordinary beauty of some devi from heavenly planets walks in the temple, it'd be pretty hard unless you have some nam ruchi. Because we have indriya ruchi. We have a taste to enjoy our senses from time immemorial. The senses and the sense objects are like iron like iron filings and a magnet. They're automatically attracted to each other. A magnetic piece of iron and some iron, magnet and some iron filings. They automatically attracted. So like this, Lord Chaitanya preached by his beautiful body. But not only is the body a source of beauty, but your lakshana, your characteristics, and your qualities, your saintly qualities, they're also beautiful. So Prabhupada is showing beautiful qualities here. It's not that Prabhupada's body was particularly beautiful. At least to the non-devotees, they thought Prabhupada was just an old, wrinkled old man. He's not a wrinkled old man. The Karmis didn't think Prabhupada is beautiful. We thought he's beautiful because beauty is in the eye of the beholder. We thought everything about Prabhupada's disciples think everything about Prabhupada is beautiful. His teeth, his nose, his smile, his ears. When the devotees, disciples describe Prabhupada, they say he had an aristocratic nose. He had a beautiful flared nose with an aristocratic, we use all kinds of exaggerated adjectives to describe the form of our guru because we love Prabhupada. Love is like that. But the objective or non-connected or the unrelated non-devotee, he will see Prabhupada as some old man. But yet, Prabhupada's real beauty, or one of his most attractive beauties, was his qualities. His childlike innocence, his childlike purity, his respect for everyone. He went to one program in Butler, Pennsylvania, and he gave some lecture there. So Prabhupada went to Butler and he gave this lecture. And afterwards, Sally Agarwal, she introduced Prabhupada. This is Mr. Smith and Mr. Jones, like this. Prabhupada said, "Very nice to meet you, Hare Krishna." Then the next day, Prabhupada was driven to the store to buy some vegetables for cooking. And he was riding in the car with Gopal Agarwal. And he looked out the window of the car and he saw the different people that he met the night before. And he was waving, "Oh, there's Mr. Jones. Hello, Mr. Jones. Hare Krishna. Hello, Mr. Smith." So Prabhupada, he's so friendly and so this beauty of his qualities. So this being shown here, Prabhupada finished his lecture. It's a hall that could hold 500 people. 7 people came. Prabhupada didn't finish his lecture and say, let's go. Take me home. Nobody came. Take me home. And he didn't finish his lecture with a feeling of disgust or unhappiness or frustration. He was very happy, detached. And he went to the door. He went to the door, the exit door where everybody's going. He didn't leave out. He didn't go out the stage left, hop into a limousine and whoosh off to the castle. He went to the exit door, sat down in a chair by the door to reciprocate and talk personally with those 7 people that had come. Very, very personal. Very, very concerned. Only, 7 people came. I want to know who you are. What is your name? What do you do? Why did you came? There's so much behavior we can learn from the charitra, the life and teachings of the pure devotees. There's the book Bhagavat and the devotee, Bhakta Bhagavat, and the Shastra Bhagavat, explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita. These two are required for a sadhaka to attain siddhi, or perfection of Krishna Prema. It requires a continual association of the Shastra Bhagavat, and which is the book Bhagavat, and the Bhakta Bhagavat, means the devotee who is exhibiting the qualities of a devotee, exhibiting the pure qualities of the soul. So, Brahmananda's mother was there, and Swamiji was very cordial and friendly towards her. But in generally, the devotees were very depressed and unhappy at the small turnout. Because the devotees were unhappy because they want to please their spiritual master. They made arrangement so that hundreds of people could come and hear from him, but then only a few came, so they were unhappy because they felt that they couldn't please Prabhupada the way they wanted. This is always the mood of a disciple, that he's eternally indebted to the spiritual master. And he tries over and again and again and again to repay the debt and try to balance the books. But he's always in the red. He's always in the, he's always in debt. He makes huge programs, but then, and he thinks, oh, this is very successful. And he may even think, I did a good job. My guru must be pleased. And then the guru says, oh, you made a very nice program, very huge program. Did you invite my godbrothers from Vrindavan or something? Oh, Guru Maharaj, I forgot. I didn't think. Oh, but I wanted them to come. Oh, I'm sorry, Gurudev. So it's like we make a huge program, but then all of a sudden Gurudev, he points out one point. Where are my Guru Bhais? Oh, that's right. I remember you told me. Oh, I forgot. I'm sorry. Like that. So we're always making mistakes and blunders in our attempt to please our spiritual master. But nevertheless, we have to keep trying over and over and again. Disciples were feeling like that. Oh, so few people came, and Prabhupada came all the way here, and he's old, and it's difficult for him. They said, I'm sorry, Swamiji, because there was no Prabhupada. The name Prabhupada came in 1974. Until 1974, for 8 years, it was Swamiji. I'm sorry, Swamiji, that we brought you here and almost no one came. The devotees apologized. Prabhupada raised his eyebrows and said, no one? No one? You didn't see Narada Muni? You didn't see Lord Brahma? And the devotee said, actually no. I didn't see him. I saw his Veena. No, they didn't see his Veena. They didn't see Narada Muni. And Prabhupada said, don't you know, whenever there's chanting of Hare Krishna, even the demigods come to participate. In Los Angeles Temple, when they opened the new temple in 1970, I think it was the end of 74, maybe beginning of 75, there was a beautiful addition to the temple, because the artist devotees had gone to Mayapur and they learned how to make dioramas out of straw and plaster and all these things, dolls. So what they did is they made all these dioramas of demigods, Gandharvas and Charanas, playing, and they were dancing, and they were playing veenas and tamburu and all these different instruments they were playing. And they were all, I don't know if they're still there, I think they fell down in the earthquake. But they were all around the ups, up, where these garlands are. They were all up around the temple, the square. They were all standing there on a ledge all around the temple. So whenever we would have kirtan in the middle, we'd look up and we'd be surrounded by all these demigods and Gandharvas dancing and playing musical instruments. It was really a celestial atmosphere to engage in kirtan and dancing in the Los Angeles Temple and the Sandhya Aarti with Agnidev leading the singing. And there'd be seven or eight mridanga players. And it was really quite an extraordinary event. really, it was wonderful even to remember. So like that, the demigods will come to the kirtan, and Prabhupada, he felt quite happy. Narada Muni came, Brahma came. When we try to get the Minister of Railroads, the Minister of Railroads of India to come to our program, we think it's a big thing. It's a big achievement if our chief guest is the Minister of Railroads or something. I've seen some ISKCON programs. Chief guest, Minister of Mining, Mining Minister. Prabhupada does a program, Lord Brahma comes. I mean, he's a big minister. He's probably the biggest. He's the Maha Maha Pradhan Mantri. Right? So he came, and then Narada Muni, he's like, we have our Chandra Swami here in this India. He's advising the Prime Minister in the previous times. But Narada Muni, he's advising he's advising Narayan what to do. Narayan consults him, what should I do? In his Leela. So Narada Muni was there. Back at the temple, Prabhupada, he was kind of like making fun with the organizer, the devotee who organized the program. I told you, because they had some debate, the devotee said it should be free, and Prabhupada said you should charge. I said, I told you we should have charged some money, entrance fee. When something is free, people think it is worthless. But if you charge $3 or $5, people will think, oh, you're offering a very valuable thing. We have to pay $5 to go there. In Bengal, there is a story of a man who went house to house offering free mangoes. And no one would take his mangoes. Can you imagine Rajphal, the king of fruits? It's coming now, it's appropriate we should read this because now our tongues are watering and mango season is coming, isn't it? And our eyes are searching for that market that's bringing in the first crop from, you know, I don't know, wherever, Madhya Pradesh or something, right? Eyes are looking. Where is those red ones? No. Green one's coming, yellow one's coming. So the story Prabhupada told us in Calcutta, a man was going around offering free mangoes and no one would take them. Everyone was thinking, why is this man giving away free mangoes? Maybe there's razor blades inside those mangoes. Like in the West they put these funny things you hear about on Halloween. There must be something wrong with these mangoes. So then he charged 3 rupees. He started going around, and they thought, oh, these look like good mangoes. Oh, the price is only 3 rupees. Very good, I'll take 5. So Prabhupada, practically speaking, has a story to illustrate every point. These are some of the symptoms of gurus. They always have unlimited reservoirs of stories, because people in Kali Yuga, they prefer, you know, drama and stories. So when people see that something is free, they think it's worthless. Charge them some money and they'll think it's very nice. So that's Prabhupada's statement. Srila Prabhupada ki. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 15, text 1, the killing of Dainuka, the ass demon. Translation, purport. Shukadeva Goswami said, when Lord Ram and Lord Krishna attained the age of Poganda, Lord Ram means Balaram, while living in Vrindavan, the cowherd men allowed them to take up the task of tending the cows. Engaging thus in the company of their friends, the two boys rendered the land of Vrindavan most auspicious by imprinting upon it the marks of their lotus feet. Jai ho, Radha Partha Saratiki Jai ho. Purport. Lord Krishna wanted to encourage his coward friends who had been swallowed by Agasura and then stolen by Lord Brahma. Therefore, the Lord decided to bring them into the palm tree forest known as Talavan, where there were many delicious, ripe fruits. Since Lord Krishna's spiritual body had apparently grown slightly in age and strength, the senior men of Vrindavan, headed by Nanda Maharaj, decided to promote Krishna from the task of herding calves to the status of a regular cowherd boy. He would now take care of the full-grown cows, bulls, and oxen. Out of great affection, Nanda Maharaj had previously considered Krishna too small and immature to take care of the full-grown cows and bulls. It is stated in the Kartik Mahatmyam section of the Padma Puran, Shukla Ashtami Kartikeyetu Smrita Gopashtami Bude Taddinad Vasudeva Bud Gopa Purvam Tu Vatsapa. The eighth day of the lunar fortnight of the month of Kartik is known by authorities as Gopashtami. From that day, Lord Vasudeva served as a cowherd, whereas previously he had tended the calves. The word Paday indicates that Lord Krishna blessed the earth by walking on her surface with his lotus feet. The Lord wore no shoes or other foot gear, but walked barefoot in the forest, giving great anxiety to the girls of Vrindavan, who feared that his soft lotus feet would be injured. Oman gyana timirandasya giranjana shalakaya chakshurun militam yena tasmai shri gurave namah. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasudeva Gaur Bhaktivedanta Vanchakopa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Titanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Krishna is now entering his Koganda age. In Komara age he showed affection from his time of his appearance to the age of 5 years old. He showed affection to his mother and father in Gokul. And most of the pastimes in Gokul were sharing this motherly affection with the mothers of Gokul, of the other families, the elderly gopis, stealing their butter and such, and being fed by them, and all these different pastimes. They were Vatsalya Bhav. And while Krishna was in Gokul, he had to vanquish a few demons, Putana, Shakatasura, Trinavarta, liberate the demigods, Nalukovera and Manigriva, that were bound by Narada's curse to the form of the Yamala Arjuna trees. Krishna brought those down and liberated them. And after that point, Nanda Maharaj's elder brother, Upananda, and other senior members of the panchayat, as you say, the panchayat, they met with Nanda Maharaj and said, "Oh, Brajendra Nandan, we have our Brajendra Nandan." Well, that's the son of the king of, anyway, so, "Oh, king of Vrindavan, Nanda Maharaj, it is not very safe here. It seems that our children, and especially your boys, are always being attacked by demons. So better we move from here. We should go to Vrindavan. Very lush grass is there on Govardhan Hill. Very tasty, sweet grass for the cows, which is our primary concern. And it is a demon-free zone. Demon-free. Asura-free zone. Let us go there and peacefully we can maintain our cows and live happily with our families, and our children can be happy and secure and free from all fear." Nanda Maharaj conceded to his request. They loaded all the bullock carts and they left. They crossed the Yamuna. Then they settled first in an area called Chatikar. In the 11th count of the Bhagavatam, there's a purport which we already read. There's a quote from the Harivamsa. It says that the cowherd men, they got to the area, they entered Vrindavan because the forest of Vrindavan, their Dwarasavan, there are 12 forests, and they left the forest of Mahavan. Mahavan is where Gokul is. It's sometimes called Brihadvan or Mahavan, which is a very beloved forest of Nanda Maharaj. He liked very much. So then they moved. All the cows and crossed the Yamuna, the bullock carts and everything. And then they settled, as Kavi Karnapur explains, and Harivamsa and so many other shastras Bhakti Ratnakara, Gopal Champu, they settled for a year or so in an area called Chatikar. And the reason nowadays it's called Chatikar, and we have our Chatikar Road, which the Krishna Balaram Temple is situated on. Chatikar Road runs, it begins basically, you could say, in Vrindavan, or you could say at the Yamuna, and it runs all the way to Govardhan. And that, in fact, is the you could say, the city limits or the boundary of the village of Chatikar. And Harivamsa, it explains how it got the name Chatikar. It says, Shakat, the verse, the line says, Shakat Arda Chandra. What happened was that they went and they had so many thousands and thousands of people and cows and wagons or bullock carts that they made a half circle, Arda Chandra. Arda Chandra means a half moon or a half circle. So they made a half a circle with their bullock carts, the bullock carts and the animals. So the Arda Chandra in the local language is known as Chatikara, because chakra means full circle. We say chakra, right? No, chakra. It means full circle. So Chatikara means half circle. This is how it became known as that. So they made a half circle. So that was their settlement. That was their temporary town. But there's no such thing as establishing a village or a kingdom without a wall around your kingdom. Even thousands of years ago in the Western world, in China, the King of China established the Great Wall of China, which was separating his kingdom from another, but it went all the way around his kingdom. It's quite... You see, even here, I think in Old Delhi, there was a wall. There's some city wall of the old Delhi. There was a wall around Old Delhi with so many entrance gates into the city. There was a wall around the old city. This is the nature. Kings will always make a wall around their palaces or cities. In Sri Rangam, there's seven walls around the complex. And in each wall, there's so many people living, and there's businesses, and so many... It's not that puja is going on. There's roads and vehicles. Isn't it right? In Sri Rangam, there's... It's a city, and the center of the city is Ranganath. And there's seven walls surrounding the city, but inside each of those walls, it's not that everywhere everyone's running around with incense sticks and offering artik. They're selling things and living there, and it's a city. So Nanda Maharaj, one half of the circle of his city was made, the wall was made by the bullock carts, and the bulls and the cows. And the other half was made by the babul trees. By the thorn trees, Harivamsa says, by the thorn trees. So it's interesting to note, although there were so many beautiful, pious trees 5,000 years ago, huge trees, Bokul, or Harishringhar, you say Harishringhar, Bokul, and Banyan, and Tamal trees, and Kadamba trees, so many beautiful, auspicious trees, but there are also bubble trees with these thorns. These big thorns. That's why the gopis were worried that Krishna might step on some of those thorns when he would wander. So they found this area of... You see also today, it's interesting to note, when you go from our temple to Govardhan, you go down Chatikara Road. At any rate, one wall was made by thorn trees. It's interesting to note, if you drive on the road, Chatikara Road, from our temple to Govardhan, you go down Chatikara Road, and on either side of the road, it's lined with trees. What kind of trees are they? Babul trees. Thorn trees. So these very well may be descendants of the same trees which formed one half of the wall of Nanda Maharaj's city at Chatikara. So while they were at Chatikara, Krishna was still in his Komara Leela. He was still a Komara. He had not yet started to take out the cows. He was still taking out the calves. So when Krishna arrived there in Chatikara, then he started to wander a little bit away from the village. And Gokul, he was staying practically in the compound. And you're right near the Goshala in the compound in his Komara Leela. But now the end of his Komara Leela, he had shifted to Chatikara. And now he was wandering a little bit further away under the protection of his elder brother and the elder coward boys like Bajrasen, Gobata, and Bajavardhan, and Balaram. The elder coward boys were looking after him, protecting him like a father. So then he was feeling, because now he's growing up, he's getting old now. When you're 2 and 3, you crawl around, but when you start to be 4 and 5, you get your bicycle. When you're 5, I remember when I was 5 years old, I got my bicycle. Then I was really stretching out. So now Krishna, this is around his fifth year, 4th, 5th year, Now he starts going to the bank of the Yamuna. When he got to the bank of the Yamuna, they had the calves. They were taking out some calves by the bank of the Yamuna, and they were watching them there. And all of a sudden, there was a very funny-looking calf over there. It had a very funny smell. He looked like a calf, but he didn't smell like a calf. He was a mystic yogi. He was an asura. He knew how to change his body to look like a calf, but he didn't know how to smell like a calf. A vatsaganda. Just like Krishna has one bull is known as Padmaganda. You see in Radhakrishna Ganadesh Deepika, this describes the pet animals of Krishna, and he has one bull named Padmaganda. He has a Padmaganda. He smells like a lotus flower or something. At any rate, this demon, Krishna said to Balaram, "I smell something funny here. Something stinking. It smells like a demon. And it's coming from over there. But that's a calf over there." And then they came to understand that this is not a calf. This is Vatsasura. This is Vatsasura. This is the calf demon. All right, let's have some fun. So then they grabbed him by the tail, woo, whipped him around, finished him off. And then there was a couple other demons hanging around the Yamuna. These are all Krishna's early Purva Yamuna Leela, his early Yamuna Leela. He had so many pastimes on the bank of the Yamuna. He liked the Yamuna very much. And he developed Krishna developed a liking for Yamuna after he moved to Chatikar. Because in Chatikar he was able to go out and swim in the Yamuna at the end of his Komar Leela and enjoy so many pastimes. Then he saw one big duck, huge duck. And as soon as he saw the duck, and then the duck looked at him, he swallowed him up. This is Bakasura. And then Krishna finished him. So like this, and then there was Agasura. And then the calves were stolen, and the boys were stolen by Brahma. And then a year later, these two pastimes were told about Agasura and Brahma. And then Krishna entered his sixth year. And that is known as the beginning of the sixth year up to the tenth year is Poganda. Krishna's Poganda age is divided into three parts. There's Adi Poganda, Madhya Poganda, and Antya Poganda. And Nectar Devotion describes the beautiful Sundarya Rupam of Krishna and his different stages of his Poganda Leela. So basically every 2 years, the Adi Poganda was from the age of 6 to 8, or 6 to 7, and then there's from 7 to 8 and a half, and then 8 to 10, like that. There's three divisions of 6 years. So in the Adi Poganda Leela, in the beginning, when Krishna became, when he entered his beginning of his sixth year, some of his physical, you can say, his transcendental body had particularly attractive qualities. One is that his lips were bimba rakta adara. His lips were red like a bimba fruit, bimbadara. Adara means his lips were very, very red. And his face was a little thin still, not so fat. And then I just read it because I just was looking at this in that devotion. And his Adi Poganda, he had very reddish, lustrous lips. His abdomen was very thin. But he had three lines. He had a little bit of a fatty neck. And he had three lines on his neck like the lines out of a conch shell. At this time, he liked to wrestle and dance with his friends. And then he entered his Madhya Poganda. Then his cheeks became chubby, lustrous and round. His cheeks were as lustrous as a beautiful pearl. And then on his waist, on the side of his waist, he manifested Trivali. Trivali means these three folds of skin on the side by the hips, you could say. It's at the waist region of the hips, which is one of the signs of beauty of a woman, is Trivali. These three lines on the waist. And then he started to wear a turban then, and he carried a stick. When he was a little boy in Komar Leela, he also carried a stick. It was a little tiny stick. Like little babies, sometimes they have these little rattles with two little plastic things that cha-cha-cha. They shake like this and it rattles and makes noise. They're holding their hand, the baby. But now he had a stick. It was 1.5 meters long. So this is basically, he was getting ready for cow herding. He was getting ready, he was getting, trying out the stick, 1.5 meters long, you know, a long stick, 56 inches long. And then that stick was surrounded by golden rings, pure golden rings, a very beautiful stick. Now in this Antya Pogonda, because now we're starting, this section of Bhagavatam, we're going to hear about Krishna's Pogonda Leela. So this, at the end of the Antya Pogonda, which is the end of the Pogonda, which means 9 and a half years old, coming on 10 years old, and going 10 and a half. Because from the end of his 10th year, or the beginning of his, from the beginning of his 11th year up to 15, that is his Kaishor Leela. So as we, so this time the characteristic of Krishna's beauty was his beautiful long hair, because his hair had been growing since his birth. His hair has been growing now for 10 years. Of course he must have had some hair cutting ceremony. There must have been some hair cutting ceremony for Krishna as a baby. They do like that. But basically his hair has been growing for 10 years. Now as described Nectar's devotion, that Krishna's hair was hanging down to his hips. Very, very long and very, very beautiful, black and curly and wavy. And sometimes it was scattered about his shoulders. It was loose. And when it's hanging about his shoulders, Rupa Goswami describes that it appeared that Krishna was being embraced by the goddess of fortune. Just like if a man embraces his wife and her hair is all loose, then her hair comes around him and hangs on him like that. So this is the analogy it uses, which is indicating that yes, very soon Krishna will be embracing the goddesses of fortune. And their loosened hair will hang around his shoulders. So this symptom, this is one of the, in the Antya Pogonda time of Krishna's Leela, he showed this beautiful long hair scattered over his shoulders, which was a foreshadowing. Foreshadowing means indicating his future Leelas as Krishna Kishore with the gopis. Because Krishna's pastimes in his Komara Leela, he principally shows affection to his mothers. The mother cows by becoming their calves, the other gopis by stealing their butter, and to his mother and father. This is the time of Gokul Leela, his paternal Leela, Vatsalya Bhav. Then Pogonda Leela is at Chatikar, and also in the area of Krishna Balaram temple, that is Pogonda Leela, and there's also Kaishor Leela. But Pogonda Leela is the time of Sakya Bhav. This is the time, principally during Pogonda Leela, when Krishna shows affection to his cowherd boyfriends. This is the main activity, wrestling and playing with them. And then in Kaishor Leela, then Krishna shows his affection. He shows his affection for the gopis. Principally, this is the time for Madhurya Ras, Madhurya Leela, and so many pastimes with the gopis. Even when he goes out with the cowherd boys, then he sneaks off from them and meets with the gopis. This is Madhyan Leela. Madhyan Leela is in the afternoon, from 11 o'clock in the morning till 3:30. He goes out with the cowherd boys at 8:30 in the morning. From Chatika, Krishna was given charge of the cows. And then, as soon as he got charge of the cows, he wandered very far. And he was thinking, actually, I caused some difficulty with this pastime of Agasura. The cowherd boys saw this huge snake, and they thought it was a big cave. Let's go play in there. So they immediately ran inside, depending on me and having full faith in me. And they suffered some difficulty in their hot, stinky breath, fishy breath of that serpent. And then Brahma kidnapped them for 1 year. And so now, I feel that maybe they suffered something, so I want to reward them. Just like if you give some difficulty to another devotee, maybe you offend some devotee or you cause some difficulty, then you feel, oh, I caused some trouble to that devotee. I caused some difficulty or trouble. I want to give him some gift. I should give him some mahaprasadam to make him feel happy. Because this is the nature of love. So Krishna was thinking, I want to make my coward friends happy. Because maybe they feel a little distressed. They were locked in a cave for a year and they were swallowed by that big snake. So I know that in Taliban, there's many, many sweet fruits on the palm trees there. This is the season. So let us go there. And I will give all the boys will eat these wonderful fruits. So that was Krishna's desire, to please all of his devotees and satisfy them by giving all of his coward boys wonderful sweet fruits. So they would forget, so they would completely forget any distress or discomfort that they may have felt by being swallowed by Agasura. But Taliban is a long way away. It's very far from Chatikar, where they were staying at the time. So Krishna, he went out, he was given a charge of the cows and Gopastami, and he went that great distance to Taliban. But it's also explained that on that particular day, on Gopastami, towards the end of Krishna's, this was the beginning of his Pauganda Leela, but later on in his Pauganda Leela was also Gopastami, and Krishna worshipped the cows and he wandered far away into the pasturing grounds with the cows. Then the gopis heard that Krishna was going there. So Radharani and all the sakis from, at this time they were in in Barsana. Then they followed Krishna into the distant forest, into Kamyavan or some other forest. And as they were following Krishna, it was very muddy in the pastures because the cows were so happy to be with Krishna. They were so happy to be with him that without even being milked, they were just letting all their milk down. And the cows, all the ground was becoming muddy from the milk from the cows. So for the coward boys to walk in the muddy ground is no difficulty because their dhotis are tucked up very high. But the gopis were coming behind them because they wanted to see what does Krishna look like when he's going out in this Gocharan Leela, when he's taking the cows out for fat. What does he look like? What do his friends look like? So Radharani and the gopis came, but they wear these dresses, like saris. Their saris are very long and they cover their ankles. So in order that their mothers would not detect that they were out in the muddy pastures, because usually they play in the palace courtyard. The gopis will play in the palace courtyard, which is covered with marble and onyx and lapis lazuli, and very clean. The gopis aren't rolling around in the mud. They're not like the coward boys. They're not wrestling. Of course, there's a pastime of that also. Dauji, Gauri Dauji. But anyway, so Radharani, she pulled up her sari just above her ankles. So because of this, we see that in ISKCON Mayapur, on this particular day, Radharani shows her lotus feet one day a year on Gopastami. Because in the Shastras it's described that Radharani, on this day, she followed Krishna into the pasturing grounds and she lifted her sari. So the demigods, all the demigods who were witnessing Krishna's pastimes and all the different rishis who had taken the form of Chirya, sparrows and Tota, all these different rishis, they could see the beautiful lotus feet of Radharani as she's following Krishna on Gocharan Leela. So this happened on Gopastami, this pastime. So this is the day that Krishna was given charge of the cows. And then Prabhupada mentions in the purport, he says that the boys rendered the land of Vrindavan auspicious by imprinting the marks of their feet on it. Vrindavanam punyam ativa chakrutu. They made the land of Vrindavan pure and pious by the touch of their feet. So Prabhupada quotes in the purport, he's quoting Sanatana Goswami's, he doesn't mention here, but he's actually quoting Sanatana Goswami's Tika on the Bhagavatam, Vaishnav Toshini, where Sanatana Goswami is probably quoting the Padma Puran, where he says that when Krishna was in Vrindavan, he didn't wear any shoes. He went barefoot. He didn't wear any shoes. And one day, there was a conversation between Mother Yashoda and her Lala. She said, "Listen, Krishna, the sun is very bright, shining. You should take an umbrella with you. Take a chata with you." They were living at, Chatikara, and you should take a chata. You should take an umbrella with you. because the sun is very bright. And you should wear some shoes because now you're in your Pogonda Lila and you're wandering to Talavan and Kamyavan and so many distant forests, which are full of rocks and pebbles. As you know, Kamyavan is in the desert. It's in Rajasthan. There's so many rocks and heavy rocks and pebbles and stones there. And there's so many babul trees and so many thorns everywhere. Please, why don't you wear shoes and take an umbrella? And he said, hey, Janani. Hey, mother. You understand that we have our Vaishya Dharma. We are Vaishyas. And as coward men, we have our Dharma that we have to follow. Our beloved mothers, the cow, Gomata, she also goes into the bright sunshine. And the sun is also beating down on her head and scorching her head very, very with intensely, tivra, intense rays, hot rays. And she also, with her feet, our mother has to walk with her feet on these pebbles and stones and thorns, but she wears no shoes. So how can I take more comfort than my mother? This is our dharma. We, as Vaishyas, we have to walk. We walk behind the cows. We don't walk in front of the cows and say, "Oh, I'm God." No, the cow is our mother. She is our worshipful superior. She goes first, and we walk behind her. We walk behind her out of respect. We are the servants of our mother. So it is impossible for us to wear shoes. Oh, Lala, oh, how can you say that? You'll be so much perspiring. It's terrible. How can this happen? And she's crying. And then Krishna's thinking, oh, Mother Yashoda was so disturbed and unhappy that he wouldn't concede to her request to wear shoes or carry an umbrella. And then Krishna was thinking, I have to pacify my mother somehow. She says, listen, oh mother, listen, it's not like you think it is. It's not that bad. They're really, the pathways that we walk on, they're actually very soft. First of all, the Chamari deer go there and they have these very long tails. And they go there and they walk before me, they're in a very happy mood, and they sweep the footpaths. They sweep the pathways with their long tails. And they sweep away and brush away all the thorns and stones. So there are no thorns or stones on the footpath. And as far as the sunshine, there's such tall, huge trees there with extensive covering, dense covering of foliage and leaves, providing we are simply walking in the shade of those trees so we don't feel any disturbance from the sun. And when we do go out in the sun, all the clouds gather overhead like friends. The clouds gather over my head like friends, and they form a natural canopy and a natural umbrella over my head, the head of the cows, and the head of all the coward boys. So we don't feel any penetrating rays of the sun because they're blocked by this umbrella of the clouds. Not only that, when we walk on these clear footpaths and we play our flutes and our panpipes, because we play these little panpipes with different pieces of grass and these different little panpipes, the trees become so happy that the bees in the trees are singing and humming, and then the trees, all the nectar honey and the beehives hanging from the trees, it starts to flow down the trees. It rushes down the trunk of the trees, and that honey mixes in with the soil and the footpaths. So when that honey mixes in with the soil, it makes the soil very soft. So it's just like we're walking on these soft, wonderful footpaths. And as anyone knows, anyone who's into beauty care, they know if you rub honey, if you rub honey into your skin becomes very soft. When you go in the market, they have these shampoos, honey enriched, honey saban, shahad saban, honey inside of the soap. So Krishna said, not by walking in these honey-filled footpaths, my feet are not disturbed at all. Rather, my feet are kept very, very soft. They're already soft, but this keeps them very, very soft. So In this way, Krishna is explaining, there is no need for me to wear shoes. So therefore, Krishna never wore shoes in Vrindavan. And moreover, one last point, we can continue tomorrow, but one last point is that a very interesting phenomenon, that Krishna's footprints, no living entity ever stepped in Krishna's footprints. Because these were the Brajabhushanam. These were the Brajabhushanam. These were the ornament of Vrindavan. Not only did the touch of Krishna's feet completely purify Vrindavan, it says Vrindavanam punya, it says Vrindavanam punyam ativa chakratu, pader Vrindavanam. The Krishna pad, the Krishna charan were purified. Every step, the land of Vrindavan was purified by Krishna's steps. But not only that, that Vrindavan was Vrindavan, who is the Sandini Shakti of the Lord. Vrindavan is Balaram. Balaram expands his Anantashesha in his form of the existence potency, Sandini. He expands himself as the holy Dham of Vrindavan. So Balaram was personally protecting the footprints of Krishna, personally commemorating and protecting those footprints. So in Vrindavan, when Krishna was there, even the tigers, the elephants, the deer, the jackals, and all the wild beasts of Vrindavan, they would never step in Krishna's footprints. The 9 lakhs of Nanda Maharaj's cows, he had 9 lakhs of cows, they would never step in Krishna's footprints. They would go around them. They would go over them or around them. Somehow they would avoid them. Why? Because these are the ornaments of Vrindavan, and if anybody simply sees the footprints of Krishna, they become Krishna conscious. Simply seeing the footprints of Krishna. And there's a verse like that. It explains that simply by seeing the footprints of Krishna, one can become free from material entanglement. There's one prayer. One time, Indradev was praying to Surya. He said, Surya, you are so fortunate. You are so much more fortunate than me, because with the eye, because you can see Krishna's footprints all the time with the rays of your sunshine are extending all the way to Vrindavan, and the rays of your sunshine are extending all the way to Vrindavan, and you can see the lotus footprints of Krishna. You're so fortunate. But me, even though I have thousands of eyes, my body is covered with thousands of eyes, I cannot see the lotus feet of Krishna. This is in Nectar Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. This is a prayer by Indra. He said, you are Ahobhagya, oh Suryadev, you are so fortunate, much more fortunate than me. With the rays, your rays, you're seeing the beautiful lotus feet of Krishna. And anyone who sees the lotus feet of Krishna, they will become free from their attachment to the material world. So maybe tomorrow we can continue our discussion of Krishna's pastimes. Srimad Bhagavatam ki.